Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian the Trooper Brushwood.
I'm still alive. You've not gotten me yet, old man sickness.
Brian, and don't take this the wrong way, but I'm feeling nauseous just looking at you.
I also am feeling nauseous, but for because of other reasons.
Speaking of not nauseating is Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Gentlemen, I'm gonna hijack this conversation, this show for a little bit of reflection, perhaps. We are, as mentioned, we just said an After Things. My book, The Naturalist, has now been on number one on the Amazon paid Kindle store now for the better part of a month, and I've made the Amazon charts. Where the Amazon charts is another thing to check. Where what charts does is they take every book and they add together, like if you take, let's say, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone, depending where you are, how many books it sold, how many ebooks it sold, how many audiobooks it sold, how many page reads they had of it, whatever. And they have a most sold and they have a most read section. And the most, so that's my book has only had the ebook available for pre-order, but that's been able to make it for the last couple of weeks. It's exciting. I don't mean to be like, hey, everybody, yay, me. Because that would really
And for the record, if there was ever a time in your career to be yay me, this is a pretty good time to use that coupon.
Yeah, but I think people tell me it's already expired. So, I want to talk about this. So, like, what happened? So, I do a lot of Periscope sessions. I talk about stuff, but I don't get too into the business of what's going on because, one, I don't want to bore people with it, and also, because I get questions like, oh, like what about TV or film or things like that? And one of the things you have to understand for many people out there may not know, like when you talk about TV or film development or shows or things or books and properties getting optioned, is when something gets optioned, when somebody says, hey, we like an option, is where somebody says, hey, we want X amount of time to try to set this up and get it into production. So they come to you, they offer you some money to say, hey, we'll pay you this for 6 months or a year to try to get this set up at a studio and have a studio buy this to make it into a thing. Mm-hmm. And then if the studio says, we're going to buy it, then you get a bigger chunk of money, right? Option is basically saying you're exclusive. You're the only one who can sell it if you can pull this deal through.
And by the way, that exclusivity is no joke because nobody will even take your property out to pitch it unless they know for a fact that they and only they have rights to do so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So options happen all the time. Options happen every day. Thousands of properties are optioned. Yet the opportunities for things to get made into things, there's just not enough opportunities. And I don't know what the odds are, but you know, for every 50 options, maybe something actually gets made or whatever. So that's the thing you have to think about. So I don't talk about, I have never really gone out there and like had a tweet or, hey, everybody, I just optioned this here. You might see something in my bio or something might happen if I'm working with a good good studio or somebody to say, this is currently under development here or there because it works for there. But I don't like to talk about it because it's just, I've watched other authors tell people like, hey, everybody, check this out. And it's like, most options never materialize.
It is one of those things where it's like, unless you are working with a blockbuster kind of partner, it is a sign of how many times you've been through this ringer on how much you want to talk about that, you know, later as you've been through it a few times, you might have more going on, but you are certainly talking less about how you're taking meetings in Hollywood because that's just the process, you know?
Yeah, I think if you bring in like a really great partner or something, or it's your first time out, I think that there's an advantage to doing that. But when you start telling your fans like, hey, this is being developed here, you know, when you know that 90% of the time it will never go any, it won, 90% of the time it won't even get bought, and then probably...
So this is where you and I have differing philosophies, because to me, like, I mean, that's 100% right. But like to me, knowing that there's a 90% probability this will go nowhere, then that means the mere fact that you have an option is the extent of the reward you're going to get. So it's like I don't mind telling everyone. I'm just like, how cool. Look at me. I'm pretending to be a Hollywood type.
Well, no, yeah. But there is a difference between what you do, like what have done with Scam School and what Andrew does, in that there is this other element of like, all right, well, we're just going to pay you to secure the rights on all these different projects. And so like it's a lot more of a regular kind of thing. And also you haven't like come out and told every time that you've had been at the earliest nascent stages of television production.
I mean, not since the actual TV show, but like leading up to it, because it was a 10-year journey of pitches and stuff and a lot of failures. And about halfway through that journey before the TV show came out, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to tell everyone always. And that'll be as much of the reward as I'll get.
I think you bring up a good point. And, you know, for me, I'll do the personal celebration of something. I'll call you guys up and say, hey, cool, this is what's going on here, and enjoy those moments, because those are often the only moments you get is when things, the potential. So I do that. I don't share it on a larger scale, because to me, it's this what happened to this, what happened to that, what happened to this sort of things. It's just would.
Yeah, because every time you press that button, that hype button, you know, it loses a little bit of power if it doesn't yield anything. And that's fair enough. Cause you're right. I guess socially is what I'm thinking of. Like, I'll tell everyone socially.
Yeah. Oh,
like, cause I'm not worried about jinxing it. Cause I just assume everything's going to fail.
But I mean, like, Brian, how many times a month do you get, when is Hacking the System coming back?
I will say there's not been a single month since the show went off the air that someone hasn't been asking that. And then now though, because we did the Scam School pilots, now once a month I get that question of like, hey, whatever happened to TV on Scam School? And I'm like, look, dude, years. This stuff takes years to get figured out.
And ultimately, like, I guess that's the thing, is at least you want to have the credit of being on television to get those questions, instead of like, oh, I told all my fans that I went to a meeting at MTV and at Discovery. And it's like, oh, what happened to MTV and Discovery? Like, when do they love you?
Yeah, it's that you want people to be excited about what you do, you know, and we get into these positions like, what about this? We have to be like, well, this, and you have to sort of, you know, educate people like, this is how the business works. But you don't want to be like, no, this is, you don't want to be punitive or whatever, because it's like, well, I just liked you. I just wanted more. Why are you yelling at me? You know, so there's that balance to it. But anyhow, I mean, I will tell you that one of the things that happens when you have a book that does really well is you certainly get, you know, interest from people who want to see this property into another format like film or TV, et cetera. And also you get this, what else do you got sort of thing from the publishing world. And
right.
So that's a thing now. And so my goal when I started writing 5 years ago was I wanted to do 3 or 4 books a year. I wanted to have 3 or 4 books a year. I wanted to build up some series that I could do that. This year is great. I did 3 books this year, and you know, the success of The Naturalist has been fantastic. I have next year, you know, we have another Theo Kray book coming out in March, and I'm figuring out the rest of the slate. But that was my goal, and that's sort of what I'm trying to do now, to kind of get into what's going on in that capacity, is that, you know, I'm trying to leverage this enthusiasm for the writing now, because there's time when it's like, who cares? Nobody cares. And when somebody does care, I'm trying to position myself. So everything my agent's like, can we do this? And other things I'm saying, yes, I can do that. No, I don't know if I can do that, but trying to just figure out the next step.
So I don't know if this is where you're headed, but I do want to kind of check in on this. You had mentioned that there were 2 people interested in different versions of one of your properties. And
Brian, whatever I told you privately, I told privately.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, no. I, in the abstract, I just want to know, like, that to me is agonizing. How do you choose, like, when you have multiple suitors, how do you choose? That would drive me nuts. Luckily, I don't have a number one best-selling book.
It's more complicated, and it's even more complicated than that. So
oh, really?
Hypothetically speaking, when you're dealing with properties, and I've gone through this before, you know, Angel Killer, et cetera, as you talk to people who have different ideas what they want to do for it, whatever. And, you know, and you measure, you know, one way to do that with other property, you measure their enthusiasm, you know, because it's like, oh, if they say, hey, we can have this for a period of time, how enthusiastic are they going to be about it? That's one of the things, is you could have a great name, somebody who's super, super excited, you know, when you meet with them and they've got a fantastic name and you know that'll carry a lot of weight. But if you're like, they've got 20 projects on their slate. And you're like, okay, will I really be the most important project on their slate, or will I be another option?
Well, and I guess part of the reason I'm asking you this as me seeking your mentorship and expertise, because there's been a number of, you know, Modern Rogue is doing very well, and we're getting suited by a lot of people, but all of them, it's that damned E word. It's exclusivity. They want to be the only one. It just paralyzes me. Even if, like, there's been some agencies that are top of the class, and it's like, but after 15, 20 years of, you know, most agents of all stripes just seem to, you know, to add you to the roster and then yes, forget about you, and that's it.
That's a very big concern, because you can have people who are very excited because it's hot right now, and then they might take it out and see if they can make a quick sale. If they don't, then you get hip pocketed and they tell you, hello there. They tell you, oh yeah, you're important. We're excited. This is this, but you're not. And that's the challenge, is to figure out, like, okay, I want somebody who's going to really be enthusiastic to pursue this and whatnot.
So are there heuristics that you look for, little ways that you could tell they're not a joker?
So I'll tell you what I do in reality TV. Okay, if I have a project, like I have a project set up with one studio place right now, a science-based thing and another thing, and then we had another one we wanted to do, and we said, okay, this is a particular kind of network. Who is selling to this network? Who is actively selling to this network, okay? Who's had a deal within the last year with the place that I want to sell to? That's not always – sometimes there are people that haven't sold there, but the network wants to buy from them, which you can also find out. So my question is, when I get presented by an agent like, oh, we want to go here, 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 I'm like, what have they been selling? Because that tells me who they're working with. If they haven't been selling, if they've been out of the game for a while, their chance of selling this thing is really, really challenging.
Yeah. And, well, because they have as much of a, you know, like you alluded to, frequency of success is very often the very measure of success in Hollywood and television and movie making. And when it comes down to that very, very, very tense, like, okay, now we have to make a hard decision on what we put money and effort and resources into, the tiebreakers are often, when did you do it last? And who'd you do it for? And are you my guy? Are you the guy that I like, that I want to make sure has a success? And that's what I think. You know, Brian, you're looking at a situation now with Modern Rogue where you've got a shifting entertainment landscape, agencies that have found over the last 10 years, and now even more so, that diversity is the key. Nobody wants to get everything so loosey-goosey that nobody wants to get left out on the big wave, right? You know, no one, we can't get left out on Vine Stars like we did last time. So make sure that every little thing, you know, gets locked down. And so now Modern Rogue is what that is. But you're talking to a lot of, you know, either agencies that can pair you up with other people in their agency for television or for other advertisers that they work with. That is a little bit more of a terrifying exclusivity decision than Andrew, where it's like, listen, right now the decisions that you have been making and will make about all of your properties is important because you've got a book in doing the kind of success that it is. But in general, it's like, okay, if I like these people, I think that they have a good shot at doing something, then let's put it together for a year and a half or a year, you know, get money coming in. Because for authors, a lot of times it's the option money that's really the, like, pay your rent, live money. Because that's stuff that if you are doing well enough, you can keep turning over these options and now figure out, like, okay, well, where do I want to go writing wise?
Yeah, I have to figure out, like, the bigger play of, like, what do I want to do? Because you get these opportunities where things work out your way and you're like, okay, you know, the decisions, you know, the Naturalist was a book I wrote 2 years ago, you know, and so the labor that I spent 2 years ago now is coming, you know, getting the reward from that. And that means that the things that are going to really benefit me a year or 2 years from now are going to be the decisions I make right now. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I had my first big pop outside of, like, my initial pop just as a writer with Public Enemy Zero, and Angel Killer by itself was the year that HarperCollins picked up Angel Killer and I got the TV show. And the TV show was a distraction to the writing. It was absolutely a distraction to the writing, but it was a smart choice to do. It would have been dumb for me not to have done the TV show, but it did not accelerate the writing. It did not accelerate that platform.
The TV show is sort of like an MSG ingredient in the mix, where it's like everything you do now gets to have the tagline, star of A&E's Don't Trust Anne Germain, and you get to casually talk about the millions of people who watched.
But it was a year that I spent working on that, not a weird year when my writing was at this critical point that I could have been putting a lot of energy into that.
Well, and it's like it gave you a path. It laid out a path for you that ultimately would have been contrary to writing, right? Because the big doors that open up when you're on television are, hey, how about these corporate events? Hey, how about, doing a week or a month in Macau or something where that now it's starting to air. Like, you can tour all these international areas, but that means putting together a magic show and doing all the stuff that isn't sitting in your cave and pounding out the next book.
And as you guys know, I turned that stuff down. And that was a challenging decision because there was a lot of opportunity, a lot of money, potential money was laid in, go do this and you'll make this and this will be really great and kind of money for life kind of thing. But I knew that, I said to myself, what do I want to do? I mean, if I go do this, then I'm going to be doing this for the next several years. I don't have a family to support. I don't have kids. Like, I don't need the money. You know, what I need is to do the thing that I really want to do, and chasing illusions around the world, going to different places. Like, at this point in my life, I'm like, I'm more excited about the books, the idea of the books and turning that into an entertainment platform and doing that. So, and that's hard, man. That's hard. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to make that choices, but that was that. And there are points where I'm like, what do I do? Ken says, now Andrew has a show. I had a show reel long before then, man. I've been doing pilots forever.
Yeah.
an amazing one. But I liked it. Justin was in my first pilot ever. So
I was. I was in your second pilot too.
Yeah. So anyhow, the point is you have to decide what you want to do, where you want to go. And as far as I can figure out your partners, is you have a lot of people great and capable. And then you have to figure out what will get me to where I want to go? What will get me to where? And sometimes I talk to this all the time. People are like, I don't know where I want to go. I'm like, well, standing still ain't the best choice. Moving forward. I don't think any one of us are in the position we're in right now that we thought we foresaw 10 years ago.
No. I mean, I could do the cold reading psychic, I could say that I'd be doing something like this, but the idea that I would be making the money that I am making on podcasting is,
that's my point. We all knew we'd be involved in entertainment. We'd all be personalities. We'd all be doing that for sure. But the idea of Brian splitting from John, just doing Scam School, but Modern Rogue and Scam Stuff and doing that. And also just, what the Patreon platform and things like that have done. And, the sort of the shape of these things, we're able to still be, very much independent.
I guess that's one of the, I don't want to say we're spoiled in that regard. Cause I think we all have room to grow and develop, but we're a bit spoiled in that it's possible to now never have to choose between one exclusive or another and just, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm doing the smart thing by just shrugging my shoulders and saying, well, I don't know, between the store and the online revenues and this stuff, we're doing all right. Because it may be that having the right agent and the right exclusivity and so on really could blow stuff up for us.
I would say, There is right now enough hard evidence about agencies and how they're handling YouTube properties that a healthy skepticism is warranted right now.
And I would say
I hate to powder here, but I do got to get to physical therapy, so I'm gonna have to bounce off.
Is that your pick, physical therapy?
Yeah. All right. Peace out.
Later. I would say that Brian, my thoughts on this are, I have partnerships where I go, there are people go, this would be really cool, this would be cool. And I have to think, yeah, but what do I want? They're like, oh, well, you know, we could set you up here. We know this network. We could do this or be great. And you're like, yeah, yeah. And I carefully chose my literary agent, you know, agency with Robert Gottlieb and Erica Silverman, because they get the business. They've been in it for years. I wasn't getting a lot of, we know this, people, we know this, whatever. It was about career path. It was experience I had working with other authors.
Well, and that's the thing, is you got to build up that trust, and you've got to have that kind of long-term, reflexive, I don't know, like you have to know they deliver, because that actually happens.
Yep. So it's worked out well. Want to do quick picks?
Okay. So my pick is, Saint Shameless self-promotion. I did a TED talk. I did a TEDx talk about the Diamond Club book, and about the value of social proof, and about how just by virtue, and as you are experiencing right now, Andrew, part of the reason you said yes to the deal that you did with The Naturalist is because you knew that previous people who had done it and had enjoyed benefits of that promotion, and you are now, by virtue of being in the top 10, technically just number one, it is creating this virtuous cycle. And so we talk about in the TEDx thing about how we used it for less virtuous stuff by faking the Diamond Club erotic fiction book.
Yeah. Very, very helpful. So where would people find your TEDx talk?
That's a real good question. If you type in TEDx Hartford, Brian Brushwood, you should be able to find it pretty much anywhere. It was in Hartford, sweet, Connecticut.
My pick is a quick pick, and that is if you're looking for something fun to watch, and this is Peter J. Wax recommended this to me. And do you ever watch the show Red Dwarf?
No, that was always around, because I did watch Doctor Who in the 80s, and oftentimes they would show up on PBS alongside it. But I didn't really get into it.
Red Dwarf was this British sci-fi show. Still is. They keep bringing it back. They're actually going to do a new season next month. And it was started in 1989. And it's about this guy named Lister, who is on a spaceship 3 million years in the future because he was put in suspended animation after there was a radiation leak, right before the radiation leak. So he's the only person that survives on this giant spaceship, along with the descendant of his cat that had babies and mutated into like cat people, a hologram who was his coworker, and then a robot. So it's this sort of a small characters sort of thing. There's no aliens. It's kind of a cool challenge they have of no aliens, but they do a lot of time travel and mutants and other sort of episodes. I enjoyed the show. And so on BritBox, which is this British pay whatever channel that you can get through Amazon or other things, they have all the episodes of Red Dwarf are up there, all the episodes, including the most recent season. So it's a fun show. If you like sci-fi, if you like Rick and Morty, you like kind of quirky sci-fi, I would say take a look at Red Dwarf.
It is fun to look into, kind of do a little amateur paleontology and look at the bones of the creatures that came before Rick and Morty and see where that DNA came from.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about it last night with Peter about, The Frederick Pohl's the coming of the quantum cats, and the idea of a guy in the multiverse, whatever. So there's a lot of cool stuff there. So, Brian, hope you feel better. Thank you for everybody that supported my book, by the way. I am.
Oh, dude, you killed it. You killed it. You are killing it. I got
very, very lucky. Very, very lucky. So I'm going to hop on and do a quick Periscope session after this. So I'll talk about writing. Any questions you guys have that I can answer, I'll let you know.
Awesome. Until then, how's it been, Andrew?
After
the Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.